everybody. Thank you so much for joining Hashtag No Limits. I am your host, Shelley Kino. Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon, but who are busting through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And I believe that to be 100% true based on my own life experiences, but so many other lives that I have been part of, and that I don't think there is a better or more beautiful example than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. Really quick science lesson here for those who don't know, the caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells right when it thinks its life is over. It reforms into the butterfly in the cocoon, and it's still not finished struggling, though. It has to struggle for its wings in order for them to be strong enough when they get out of the cocoon to take it everywhere it's going to go and to soar to all the beautiful heights that it goes to. None of that can be easy, but none of that is easy as an individual busting through the limits that society places upon us. So I just am so excited. My guest today has a very personal story, as most of my guests do, but this is one that the topic is, I think, a little bit more sentimental and hard because I have known people very personally who have experienced what we're going to talk about today. And I'm so appreciative for Debbie coming on. I'll bring her on in just a few more seconds. I just want to remind you, if you are watching live, give us a hashtag live and where you're watching from. If you're in the replay, give us a hashtag replay and where you're watching from. And make sure you like and subscribe to this channel because you don't want to miss any of the motivational and inspiring people that are on hashtag No Limits. I'm so happy that I've had as many episodes and had as many opportunities as I've had. All right, enough from me. I'm going to bring Debbie on. Debbie, thank you so much for being here today. How are you?
Oh, I'm well. Thank you, Shelley, for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So before we get started, you are the author of a book, and I just want to quickly have you give the title of the book, and then I'm going to talk about the giveaway that we're doing for today.
Sure. The title is Raising Ricky. The tagline is a sister's lifetime promise to protect her brother with Down syndrome.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful book. I absolutely recommend that you get it. But not only do I recommend that you get it, we're going to give it to you for free today if you are the lucky winner. So in order to be the lucky winner, you just need to do a few things. You need to subscribe to the YouTube channel. You need to share this episode, excuse me, on YouTube or Facebook. And you need to comment hashtag no limits on this thread on the Facebook or the YouTube. Either place will be acceptable. We're going to leave this open until Sunday night, which would be, I forgot to look at the date. That would be May 10th, I think. 10th or 11th, whatever the Sunday night is. And then I will do a random drawing of all those who subscribe to the YouTube channel, shared it on one of those platforms, and commented hashtag no limits. So I appreciate that you are willing to give away one of your books, Debbie. And now let's talk a little bit more about you, and then we'll get into the book and how the book came to be.
Sure. Well, I'm a retired nurse. I have been my brother's advocate for my entire life. He was born in 1961, way before there were any services available. In fact, my parents were advised to place him in an institution right from the hospital. I mean, can you imagine what that must have been like for them? But no, they brought their baby home. They had no help, no services, no physical therapy. And we ended up becoming his teachers and therapists. And so my story evolves about that. Unfortunately, my father was killed in a car accident when I was only 15. Ricky was 7.
Oh, wow. My mother, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, my mother was very distraught. And so I ended up becoming his advocate then and continued throughout his entire life. I still am his advocate. He's 63 now.
Wow.
So I want to
talk about that a little bit more. The fact that, you know, you were a big sister, you were all excited about having a little brother or little sister. And then you said 61, correct?
61, he was born.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the special education law didn't come into being until 1975. And it wasn't even really until the late 60s, early 70s that there were even laws around the country about educating people with disabilities. The federal law didn't come in until the mid 70s. So when you talk about, the reason that the federal education law came into being is because of exactly what almost happened to your brother.
Exactly.
Families were told, you need to put these children in institutions. Their life isn't going to amount to anything. And almost to the point of they're even not worthy to live. Go ahead. I can see you wanted to comment.
Well, no, it's just so sad when you think about it. How did they know? They didn't know.
Right.
These doctors told my parents, this baby will never walk or talk or have a life. Well, if he would have been in an institution, of course, that's what would have happened. But he did learn, and he was extremely high functioning. In fact, he had a job for 10 years. He lived in an apartment fairly independently. You know, he needed some assistance and supervision, but he had a wonderful life. So, and now the fact that these adults are living much longer is wonderful. However, now they have the added issue of developing Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah, and that's where it gets extra personal for me, because I have had my grandfather had dementia, and my father passed away much younger than what his father had been, but he was kind of on the cusp of starting with some dementia, and neither of them had Down syndrome, and I can just imagine how much more complex and complicated the situation becomes when you add in that other factor, that other layer.
The fact that there's little clinical research or clinical trials on this population makes it another layer of discrimination.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And not honestly something I think most people consider. You know, that we have to have those, all those represented that have dementia, no matter what other factors are going on.
Exactly. And the fact that it's close to 95% of adults with Down syndrome acquire Alzheimer's disease by the age of 65. Conversely, it's only 12% in the general population. And scientists have known this for 20 years, for decades. So the Down syndrome population has helped with the research, mm-hmm. but they aren't benefiting from the research, if that makes sense.
Well, it makes sense, but it doesn't seem right.
No, it's not. That's another reason why I wanted to write the book. I wanted to get national attention out there that these children, these adults, their lives matter, you know?
Yes. And I want to, I'm sorry to cut, I know we kind of jumped ahead to the, you know, as an adult, but I do want to go back to the childhood a little bit. As you said, you know, he was capable of doing many things that doctors did not expect him to do. Now, your family did not put him in the institution. Did they homeschool, or did they find a school setting for him?
Well, like I said, there was no special education at the time. Mm-hmm. My parents tried to enroll him in our public school kindergarten class when he was, I think he was probably 5, but they refused him because of his disability. Mm-hmm. So then they found a private Catholic preschool that did accept him because they knew that he needed socialization and he needed to be, you know, around children. That was very helpful. So he attended this preschool for a couple of years. And then finally, they started a special education class in our little town. So that helped. By the time special education was mandated, I think he was going to start high school.
Yep.
So what happened, mainstreaming, you know, you're a special education teacher, so you probably know about this, Shelley. Mainstreaming became a popular thing in, I think, the 80s.
Yep.
And so my brother, who had been isolated in a special education class, all these kids were put in a regular high school class with some special ed classes. Mm-hmm. And with no implementation, no, you know, they didn't know what they were doing. And unfortunately, these kids were bullied and treated horribly. Yeah. It was just really sad. And that's when my husband and I started a Special Olympic team to help with that. And it made a huge difference.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. And, you know, I do some professional development for educators, but I also use the same talk or very similar talk and provide it to businesses, you know, and I talk about the fact that we can legislate all we want and we can have, you know, a million laws on the books, but if we don't change a person's heart, we're not going to change their attitude.
Right. Right.
One of the reasons that I do hashtag no limits is because I want to change people's perspective of those who are different than them. And to me, my focus is disabilities. That's where my passion is. But that difference can be any kind of difference. It can be a socioeconomic difference. It can be a cultural difference. It can be a language difference. It can be, you know, like I said, I'm focused on the disability difference. But I think it is so sad how many people still have those 1960s, 70s, 80s beliefs about people with disabilities.
Yes, it's still sad. It's, in fact, I wrote a blog post about the myth of inclusion, because, mm-hmm. you know, we want to say that we have inclusion, but we really don't, not yet.
No. And again, that's another thing that I talk, I train a lot of teachers through professional development. And I talk about that just bringing a child into a classroom is not including them.
No.
You know, because then, I mean, we would say that every person in a movie theater is included in every other person's life. If all we do is just physically place the person there and say, well, you've been included.
Right.
If we're not interacting, if we're not, you know, setting them within the population of the classroom versus setting them in the back corner or somewhere, if we're not acknowledging their presence by, you know, saying hello or welcoming them into the classroom, having them participate in activities, giving them, you know, their own space. I mean, there's so many little things that can promote inclusion and acceptance, but we don't even do those.
Yeah, right. Well, you're probably familiar with the Best Buddies program in high schools?
I am.
And it's wonderful.
I wasn't familiar with them, and I started a program similar for my middle schoolers. And then later on found out about the Best Buddies program.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that has made a huge difference in the regular high schools with kids accepting other people with disabilities. One of my proudest moments was Ricky was probably in his 40s, and he got involved in the Best Buddies program through the college that was in our town. And he had this fantastic best buddy. And so Ryan and him, they would go to movies and bowling and things like that. But then Ryan had these huge ideas for Rick, and he ended up helping him present speeches at high schools about not using the R word in casual conversation.
Nice.
And I mean, when I used to go to them and I would see the response of the high school kids to him, it just brought me to tears, because he would get a standing ovation because people, you know, they just didn't understand what that word, how that word was so demeaning, you know?
Right.
And they just say it so casually. Oh, that's so retarded. And, you know, it's really hurtful when you think about it.
Yeah, I want to acknowledge we have Fran joining us. She is joining us from Southern Illinois. And she said that her kiddo's school didn't have the Best Buddies program when they went through school. And I don't know if that school district has them now. I know it's in the area where I am. It's not really a program that happens. Like I said, I started one at my when I taught middle school special education students, and it was a phenomenal success because it did what Best Buddies does. It brings people of the general education population to the special education population, and they interact, they have fun, they play games, they, you know, maybe they do some tutoring, maybe not. But it's just having that exposure. Yeah. And again, being able to challenge those perspectives and hopefully change those perspectives that it doesn't matter what the difference is. A person is a person first.
Right. And, you know, I think things like that become contagious. You know, if one person stands up, then somebody else wants to stand up. And
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so I appreciate, what you said about, you know, that the special ed law came into being about 1975. So he would have been about 14 going into high school. And the bullying thing is, again, it still happens today. I hope it doesn't happen to the extent that it used to happen because of programs like Best Buddies, because of, you know, your book and my book and shows like this, that it's getting out there. Yeah, that just because somebody has a difference doesn't mean they're bad or less than.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think sometimes maybe it's fear, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
People don't know how to approach somebody that has a developmental disability. I know even in my own community, sometimes we would take Ricky to events and some people would be standoffish, like, you know, but once they would start talking with him and they find like, oh, he's wonderful. He's entertaining. He's fun. You know?
Yeah.
They just give him a chance.
Right. And again, it doesn't matter what the difference is.
No.
Don't just accept the bias that you have. Actually challenge your bias and go interact with somebody who's different than you.
Right.
I think that's how we will change the world and make it a better place.
I hope so.
You know, it's one of the sayings that I have on my website is I'm trying to change the world to make it better for all, one IEP, one individualized education program at a time. Because if we just continue to group everybody of a particular whatever together and then only refer to that group versus individuals, I will remain in the negative mindset that it seems like our society is in right now.
Absolutely. And I loved your introduction. I mean, that was beautiful.
Oh, thank you. And I mean, I think it's true.
Yeah.
And I think all of us go through that multiple times. I mean, I realize caterpillars only do it once, but I think as humans, we change over time, multiple times. And I think that's a good thing. But I mean, you know, just thinking about Ricky and the things that he has overcome, the challenges that he has busted through. Do you want to talk more about some of those things?
Yeah, the things that he accomplished. For example, he was in a play. He auditioned for this play. I saw this advertisement in a Down syndrome newsletter, and they were asking for a teen with Down syndrome. Well, he was in his 40s by then, but I knew he could pass for a teen. So I took him to the audition, and he was able to follow the director's directions. He could say the lines, and he even could portray different emotions. I was shocked at his ability. You know, like, where did this come from? So we spent, I think, 5-6 weeks for practice. And Ricky was the only actor that had a developmentally disability or disability. The other actors were typical teens. And to see the transition of them from the beginning, like not wanting to talk to him, at the end, they loved him. You know, it just was such an experience. And there's a whole chapter in the book about this play. So, you know, I hope your readers get a chance to check it out, because it's a fun chapter, and what he accomplished was really something.
Yeah, it's difficult for me to remember lines. I did a couple of, you know, plays in high school, but never had anything that had a lot of lines to it, because memorization was never a strength of mine. And even now, to try to sit and memorize something is quite difficult for me. So you talked about that when he was in high school, because they were trying to mainstream him and how poorly it was going, and it still is poorly done today because they don't have the proper training for the people doing it. That's just a side note. but what do you, when you started that Special Olympics team, what did it look like? What sport was it in, or what activity was it in?
Well, you know, I can tell you it was the challenge of a lifetime, because I had no knowledge of sports. I just knew that I needed to do something to help him. The principal was threatening to expel him because of some of his behavior, because he was acting out because of the bully. Right. So we decided to do the Special Olympic team. We started with like six team members, I think. We started with bowling because I thought that'd be easy. And then we went to track, swimming, and it just evolved. I think we ended up with 16 participants.
Nice.
But what happened was how the school acknowledged them, because the newspaper was starting to write little articles about them. You know, who got a gold medal? The team did this. And that's what helped. You know, they became recognized, you know, and accepted.
Right.
And it was just exciting. It was just a wonderful time for my husband and I, that it'll be a cherished memory forever.
Yeah. And for anyone who's not involved with Special Olympics, I highly recommend it. I either as a participant or a volunteer, whether that's a coach, whether that's a helper at the event, you know, whatever it is, a hugger. Yeah. I mean, there are so many activities now.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you mentioned, you know, quite a few, but I'm always shocked when I see what's all available.
And it's not just
sports.
That just shows you what these kids are capable of, if given the chance and the opportunity.
Yes. Yeah. We have a gentleman local to us, and he is a Special Olympics ambassador for our state. And he's been to Florida, and I think he went to the International Special Olympics. I mean, he's just blossomed over the years that he's been in Special Olympics because of the speaking opportunities, because of the advocacy opportunities, you know, the socialization piece of it. Like I said, Special Olympics is so much more than just sports now.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And so in your journey, from what I read in the book, once he graduated high school, then what happened?
Well, and that becomes a problem, I think, for some.
Mm-hmm.
In our town where we lived in Illinois at the time, there was a sheltered workshop. And so he was able to transition to that. And he did menial piecework, you know, counting hardware items, putting them in a bag. But he was proud of it. You know, he earned a small paycheck. And it was fine. However, you know, he could have done so much more at the time, but my mother right. was still in that mindset that she didn't want him to be bullied or teased, or so she didn't want him to go on into the community, right. Even though he had the capabilities. So when my mother died and Ricky moved back to live with us in Arizona, I knew he was capable of more. And so I was able to get him a job at our neighborhood grocery store as a bagger. Mm. And he was the first one with special needs at that store. But I can tell you, he became the most popular bagger. His line was the longest because everybody wanted him to bag their grocery so they could talk to him. I mean, so.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, it's so awesome because until you give someone an opportunity, you don't know right. what kind of butterfly they're going to be.
Right.
And what kind of amazing things are going to happen.
Yeah.
And I'm so thankful that you were able to do that with him and provide that support for him to get that job.
Yeah.
And appreciative of the grocery store owner or staff yeah. or whoever decided that he would be a good employee and they yeah. wanted to take a chance on him.
Well, that's another funny story. So I went to the manager's office and told her about Rick, and she was reluctant. You know, she was not very optimistic. And I think she really was trying to dissuade me, like, well, I don't know, you know. And I said, look, just interview him. All I want you to do is interview him. And if you don't think he's going to be a fit, that's fine. I'll understand. So the next day, I take Ricky to the interview. I had picked out his clothes, and he comes out of his bedroom with his full suit. Oh. And I said, Rick, you don't need to wear a suit. He said, yes, I do. That's what you wear for an interview. Like, he knew.
Uh-huh.
And so we get to the office, and right away he shook her hand. He said, hi, I'm Rick. So I knew she would be impressed right away. But mm-hmm. she had to talk with him without me because she needed to determine if he could really follow directions.
Sure.
So after like 10 minutes or so, they come out and he says, Debbie, I got the job. She said, you're right, Mrs. Miller. He's very impressive. But if I wouldn't have pushed it, you know,
yep.
she wouldn't have given him a chance. And then like I said, it became a good thing for the store.
Right. Yeah. And it probably opened other opportunities then for other people.
Yes.
Whether they had the same disability or something else.
Or something else with cerebral palsy or whatever. Right. But then that gave them the courage, like, well, maybe I could do that.
Right. And I'm so thankful for siblings or parents that are willing to push the boundaries. I have a situation where I'm an advocate for the parent, and we've pushed and pushed and pushed, and now the team, the IEP team, understands. Like, oh my gosh, yes, this child is capable of so much more than what we were giving her credit for, and they're willing to try new things, which is opening the doors for other students coming.
Yeah. Yeah. But you've got to push the limits. You can't be afraid. That's the problem, is we just, they need advocates like yourself. And sometimes the families are reluctant. Like I told you about my mom, you know, she just was too afraid to allow right. him to have those opportunities. And that sheltered him, which, mm-hmm. you know, but anyway. So, yeah, my book is all about his whole life. I hope your readers will or your listeners will want to look at it because I think it's a good book.
Yeah, I mean, like I said at the beginning, it is a lovely book. For my regular viewers who watch live, you realize that I started late today. And the reason we started at a later time is because Debbie is involved in something that is very important. And I would like for you to talk about that, Debbie, please.
Yes, well, I think I mentioned it earlier about the increased incidence in with adults with Down syndrome and Alzheimer's disease. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. there has been a lack of research in that particular population. However, the good news is, in this year, we are starting a new research project that I'm involved in. There are going to be a couple of clinical trials that will include adults with Down syndrome on some of the medications. So I'm really excited. I'm a little dismayed that it's taken this long, but you know, progress sometimes is slow. And so there's a couple of pages in the end of the book that describes this research and what they hope to find out. So,
yeah. Awesome. That I think that is amazing work, and I applaud you for doing that. And if there is anyone else, who would like to be involved in a study, leave us a comment and I'll talk to Debbie and see if we can't direct you. I don't know that you'd be able to participate in the exact one that she's doing, but, you know, she may know of resources of where to look or.
Yeah, because, you know, what's promising, it's too late for my brother, unfortunately, because he's 63 and he already has middle stage. But what they're hoping to find is if we can diagnose them earlier or even before any symptoms happen, maybe we can prevent or at least delay the progression. So that's exciting. So, you know, these families that have teens with Down syndrome or young adults, because some of these adults start showing symptoms as early as age 40.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And what would a parent or a sibling look for? Like, what sort of symptoms are you talking about that they might be made aware of?
They're just, sometimes it's subtle. In fact, I ignored some of the symptoms because I was so busy taking care of my husband. But, you know, just like with any person that starts developing dementia, you know, they're more forgetful. Maybe their activities of daily living changes. For example, Rick was forgetting to put toothpaste on his toothbrush. He was forgetting to use soap in the shower. He had a pill reminder box and he wasn't taking the pills, you know, like he was forgetting mm-hmm. to do that. So just things like that. But as the disease progresses, it's just like anyone else in the general population that has Alzheimer's or dementia.
And so when you're saying, you know, that he forgot to put the toothpaste on or forgot the soap, this isn't just a one occurrence. This is a multiple times.
Right. And it just gradually more and more things were diminishing.
Yeah.
He was starting to wander at night. You know, I was worried mm-hmm. about him falling. He still remembers me. He knows who I am, which I'm mm-hmm. very grateful for.
Right.
But yeah, it's such a sad thing to watch. And, you know, somebody said to me what it really hurt my feelings. They said, well, you know, what's the big deal if he declines because he's already delayed? And I'm like, excuse me. Watching his decline has been as devastating for me as watching a professor decline. You know, what difference does it
right.
make? So, yeah.
I'm so sorry. That kind of stuff really, really affects my heart. And I'm so sorry that somebody said that to you.
It's ignorance, right?
I'm still amazed. I shouldn't be after all these episodes, after all of my experiences. But I'm still amazed at how exactly what you said, the ignorance is as far as what we say. And I don't even know if that person said it thinking that was somehow helpful.
I'm not sure.
I'm just kind of like, you know, sometimes when you're in a bad situation and you say something and you're like, oh my gosh, why did I say that? Yeah. You know, I hope that that person had that thought after they said that.
Yeah. I think they just thought his decline wasn't going to be that much of a problem. I don't
know. Right. And that's the unfortunate part that we talked about earlier, is there is still this belief that their life is less than.
Yes. And it's not.
It's not. I mean, I don't live their lives, but I don't, the people that I know who are different than me, and it's because of a disability, their lives are very rich and very fulfilling. It's a different rich and a different fulfilling than mine, but nonetheless, it's a life fulfilling and a life that is rich. So just again, because it's different doesn't mean it's less than or bad or sad or whatever other negative connotation people want to put with it.
That's why you're doing what you're doing and I'm doing what I'm doing, right?
Yes. That is absolutely true. So I want to make sure that the audience knows how to get your book. So can they purchase it through the authordebbiemiller.com website?
No, they can't. I don't have a direct link. Well, there is a link on there, but it'll take you to Amazon. Unfortunately, that's the best way to sell your books is on Amazon. I was able to get it into my local Barnes & Noble store.
Oh, that's awesome.
But that's a different deal. So, you go on Amazon.
What will they find if they go to author Debbie, and that's Debbie Miller.com?
That's my website, and I have a blog post. So I'm starting to write more blog posts about different things.
Okay.
About inclusion and some of the things that we have. So, you know, it's just a way to interact with me if you want. But Amazon, you can get, there's the printed version, there is a Kindle version, and my audiobook will be available, I think, next week.
That's exciting. So for those who are listening in the podcast form only, without the video version, by the time you hear this, her audiobook should be out. So you want to check Amazon for that. So for those who are just listening, one Amazon link is https://a.co/d=CYCTUKR. And that's for one version of the book. And then the other version of the book, is that https://a.co/d=7JLTJ2T. and those will be linked in the show notes of the podcast when it does come out as the podcast. And so I definitely want to commend you what you have done. I can only imagine the difficulty that you have gone through emotionally, possibly physically, probably financially, in taking on your sibling. And I, if you don't mind, I would like to talk about that a little bit more, because I haven't had a lot of siblings Many of my guests are either the person with the disability or the parent. And the fact that you're 8 years older, is he your only sibling?
I had two other half siblings. We didn't have the same father, but they were older. And so I barely knew them. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty much my brother and me.
Yeah. And so, you know, you have, as an 8 year old, you know, these great expectations. You probably played with dolls and, you know, before he was there to, you know, kind of get used to the idea of, you know, what it would be like and whatever. And so how did it change you and, you know, kind of how you interacted with your friends and your activities?
Well, I didn't understand that he was any different. Looking back, and this is one of the first chapters, is a playmate on the playground said, "Your brother's a retard." And I didn't know what that word meant. And so I went home and asked my mother, and her shocked response was a slap across my face because, you know, you just didn't use that word. Well, wow. Later they explained, Ricky has a condition called Down syndrome, blah, blah, blah. And so then it became my, I guess, goal in life to protect him. And so I would fight kids on the playground, nobody's going to call him that. And it just became part of my life. I would rush home from school and work with him on his exercises and on his speech because, you know, like I said, he didn't have any therapists at that time. Right. We were, until we were able to get him into that preschool. It's just been part of my life, I guess. I love him.
And yeah.
I just knew that I had to take care of him.
Yeah. And in your book, you talk about the struggles that your mom dealt with. And I don't know if you want to share any of that right now, but.
Well, sure. I think she suffered from a few things, mental illness, and Ricky's diagnosis was hard for her to take. And since she did not have any support system. And then when my father was tragically killed, and here she's left with a teenage daughter and this disabled son, and she has no job skills. She doesn't know how she's going to take care of them. And she just kind of checked out, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And so I had to step in. But I had wonderful grandparents that helped me. You don't know what you're able to achieve or overcome until you do it, right? Somebody says, you know, sometimes people will say to me, well, I don't know how you did that. Well, you don't know until you have to, you know, sometimes you don't have a choice.
Right.
So, and, you know, I was fortunate enough to marry a wonderful man who has, you know, been there our whole time. And in fact, when he asked me to marry him, I said, you know, you're not going to just marry me. You have to accept Ricky too, because probably he's going to live with us someday. So, you know, I don't think some people realize that when they have a sibling and the parents are older, that becomes their responsibility usually.
Yeah. And that's kind of why I wanted you to talk about it from the siblings' perspective, because I know in working with the parents that I've worked with over the years that a big, big fear for most of the parents is, what happens to my child when I am not here.
And
many parents feel, I'm sorry, many siblings feel that they should be the one, you know, that they shouldn't allow the sibling to have to go to a group home or go to, you know, anywhere other than, you know, their own home if they're just the only sibling like yourself, mm-hmm. basically. Or, you know, even if they have multiple siblings, like, well, who's going to take care of the sibling that mom and dad have taken care of all these years? And while I appreciate that sentiment, it was said to me in an interview with a sibling that it's not your responsibility as the sibling. Right. It's your gift if you choose to give it.
Right. Right. That's how we should look at it. So there isn't guilt about it. They do it because they want to, not right. because they feel they have to.
Yeah, because you can really destroy relationships.
Of course.
You know, and like you said, I don't even think siblings realize if there's multiple siblings and one of them does take on the responsibility of caring for the one who needs it, I don't think the other siblings quite even realize how much that sibling's life will change. Both, actually. I mean, both the one moving in and the one who's taking care.
Right.
I don't know how you could know, you know, unless you go through it yourself or you like this. I hope that having episodes like this one, where a sibling can talk about exactly what you just said about when you were proposed to, Jeff was not just proposing to you.
Right. And again, that was my choice. You
right.
know, I wanted him to realize that this is my choice. It's not that my parents aren't saying you have to. It was right. my choice. And you know, I'll be honest. Sometimes I felt burdened or mm-hmm. I felt sorry for myself because, you know, why, you know, Jeff and I retired and it's like, why can't we enjoy our retirement? No, we still have Rick to worry about. But, you know, those are fleeting moments. And I get out of that rabbit hole quick because you have to just be grateful for what you have. You can't second guess. You can't look at other people and say, oh, I wish I was like them. No, you know, your life is your life and you have to make the best of it.
Yeah, that's a great sentiment. One of the things that you told me about in the form that I have my guests fill out is that you and Rick and your husband lived in an RV traveling all over the country for 4 years. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure. And my husband is my best friend, that I could do that for 4 years, just my husband and I, let alone throwing in a sibling. And so kudos to the three of you for all coming out of that still happy and in a good relationship.
I know. I look back at that, like, how did we do it? But I tell you what, it was the best time. It was the best time. We met so many wonderful people, saw so many beautiful landscapes. It was an incredible opportunity for Rick because often we would volunteer at different parks. Mm. And most of them would let him participate. And so, you know, he would do jobs like folding the park maps because nobody else wanted to do it, but he did, you know, and he took great pride in it. Just, you know, it just was a fun opportunity and I'm glad we did it.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. That sounds like an amazing thing. And to do, I mean, I would imagine you probably, if you didn't see all 48 continental states, you probably saw most of them.
We did. You know, I mean, our bucket list was to see them all, but unfortunately, you know, we had to come off the road because of my husband's illness. So,
oh, okay.
We were grateful for the time we had.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. Well, again, I want to bring up how people can connect with you. So they can go to author, A-U-T-H-O-R, Debbie, D-E-B-B-I-E, Miller, M-I-L-L-E-R.com, and read your blogs there. They can go to Amazon, and it's probably easier to type in Raising Ricky.
Yeah, than it is come up that, right?
for you to try to get this link down, but it is there. And then we also have the other link. One's the ebook, one's the paperback version. And then also they can find you on Facebook. And again, I would imagine if they just typed in Debbie Miller, that it will come up, rather than having to type in the
correct
all the information behind right. the profile button. Right. So I want to give you opportunity before we leave here. Is there anything that you wanted to say today or wanted to discuss that we haven't so far?
No, I think, I just am very grateful for this opportunity. I think my book will resonate with many, even if you don't have somebody with a disability in your family, because it's about resilience and family and love and, just never giving up, because there's always tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. What a beautiful sentiment. Thank you so much, Debbie, for being my guest today. And I thank all of you who have joined me today. And make sure, again, if you are interested in getting a chance at a copy of her book, you can work it out with her once you have been determined the winner, if you want that as an ebook or as a paperback. And we're going to keep that open until May 11th, 2025, at 11:59 Central Time PM. And then after that point, I will draw the name and put you in contact with Debbie. Well, I'll probably have to reach out to you first, depending on who you are, and get your contact information and then give you in contact with Debbie. And so again, in order to win, or order to have the chance to win, subscribe to the YouTube channel, share this episode on either YouTube or Facebook, and then comment hashtag no limits either on YouTube or Facebook. And remember, guys, we know who we are, but not who we will be. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelley Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelley Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelley Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shelleykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shelleykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.